Good day, welcome to the CTT Q3 2014 results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. Today's call will be hosted by Mr. Francisco de Lacerda, Chairman and CEO, Mr. André Gujão Costa, CFO, and Mr. Peter Tsvetkov, Director of Investor Relations of CTT. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Francisco de Lacerda, Chairman and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you all. You have the presentation we published yesterday, and so as usual I'll go through it together with André Costa. We'll split the job. Starting by page 4, the CMI, the ones I would like to stress is that we have reported revenues going up. In fact, the 9 months is 2.1% up, the third quarter over third quarter is 3% up, and this is a confirmation of a trend that we have been seeing this year, but is the first year after five where we are having top-line growth, and I think that's one of the most relevant things that we should stress. In terms of reported EBITDA, we have a growth of 9%, but in terms of the recurring one, and we'll get later to more detail into the differences of the two, we have a growth of 16.8% to 101.7 million euros. Reported net profit up 16%, recurring net profit up 27.4%, and the operating free cash flow at a level of 73.3 million euros. So I think we can say strong numbers after the 9 months of this year. In key metrics below, we see the addressed mail volumes, which is one of our key issues and one of our key drivers of revenues. We see that the 9 months of this year, compared with the 9 months of last year, shows a decline of 6.1%, which is totally in line with what we guided and what we were expecting. But I think it's a reassuring confirmation after the beginning of the year, where the figures were a little more volatile than we would like them. Nevertheless, it confirms that we cannot look to this figure on a specific month or quarter. We have to have a more longer-term view, because these things in a shorter period might have some changes that are not meaningful in the trend. An addressed mail volume went down this quarter more significantly, although the volumes are 5.4%, which is more or less in line. There are some specific issues that we can comment later on to show this in the quarter. I don't think it's a change of trend of any kind. We have an average mail price increase of 4.3%. This is the effect of price and also of the volume of discounts and the other things that we have been managing during the year, and we have commented in the past. Parcel volumes growing 8% in the year, 1.2% in this quarter. Here again, we should not look only to the quarter. The third quarter in parcels, it's a tricky one because of August, where the Portugal and especially Spain is quite stopped in terms of economic activity, and so the business is small. Of course, it's small every year, but nevertheless, it doesn't move too much when you see the global figures. And again, I don't think we should take too much concern about this level. And savings flows continuing a strong growth that we have been having for a year or a little more. And so even if you remember last year of this, this time last year was when the growth in the saving product speeded up, and so the comparison with the basis of the third quarter is already a challenging one, but even with that we have shown a continuing good performance on this front. So turning the page to page 5, now having a deeper look in the mail. We see that the mail volumes, as I said, went down, but only 6.1% year-to-date and 4.3% in the quarter. And we can see that divided by the the three types of mail, transactional advertising and editorial. The unaddressed mail volumes I already commented. And in terms of revenues, because of what I already stressed in terms of price, the price increases, which is not only the announced price, but is also the discount structure that we have been managing and changing, enable us that with this decrease of volumes to have a positive growth in terms of revenues. Mail, we call the like for like, because as you remember, we sold our majority stake in a company called EAD. It's a small thing that we decided in the first quarter to do. Nevertheless, for comparison purposes, the revenues of that company in three quarters would be around 3 million. And so we took the 3 million out of 2013 to have comparison basis like for like. And so what we can say now and what we can see is that we have a growth in mail revenues, which if the growth in total revenues is first in the last 5 years, growth in mail revenues is even more important to stress. And even the transactional mail, as you can see, has a growth in the 3 months from 300 million to 305 million, and in the quarters from 96 to 100 million euros. And this, we believe, it's not only the effect of the price that we have managed, but is an effect of the lower decline of volumes, and the lower decline of volumes is also, or most importantly, a consequence of the economic growth. And so, as we have been saying since the beginning, we believe that when the economy is going the right direction, the negative effect of the economic situation will go out, and we will come back just to the structural decline. And these figures, I think, prove our case again. In page 6, in terms of revenues of mail, what we see here is, of total revenues, what we see is a deeper look into the growth of 2.1% 9 months over 9 months. And if the reported are 3.6, we took out some of the things, and the growth comparison basis is just 2.1%. But nevertheless, is a positive growth of 2.1% from 1 year to the other. Page 7, like-for-like operating costs are decreasing still, or continuing to decrease, the effect of our of the management of costs that we have been doing, the several initiatives that we have been discussing and implementing. And so we can see operating costs in recurring terms going down by 1.5% in the 9 months. And this is especially in external services because of the management of outsourcing and the contracts and procurement efforts that we have been making in different areas, in different initiatives. And Yes, please.
Regarding the non-recurring operating costs, just to remind you, we had in last year, in the first half of the year, around 8.2 million, 8.9 million of non-recurring savings in staff costs, because we cut some benefits regarding with the telephonic signature. This year we didn't have this. If we take this out, you see that although the reported ones are growing, the recurring ones are falling down. We also took out the EAD effect. If we take it out from revenues, we should take it out also from the cost. And you see at the end of the day that taking these two non-recurring effects out of it, we get a 1% decline in the operating cost. That is the one that it's better to understand the effort that we are doing in terms of cost reduction.
In page 8, the recurring EBITDA went up by 16.8%, as you can see on the left-hand side, 9 months over 9 months. 31 if we look just to the quarter. And when you look on the right-hand side on more detail, what we see is the different contributors to this recurring EBITDA, and they come from what we just commented. So a positive evolution of revenue of mail and express and parcels when we aggregate the two, a strong contribution from the revenues of financial services, and also a positive impact from the reduction on operating costs. And the three together make this increase of the recurring EBITDA. So it's really across the board and with some strength in terms of what we are generating of growth in profitability. Page 9, operating cash flow reaches 73 million euros, which is a strong evolution in the positive sense. And this comes from growth in cash flow from operating activities and also from the evolution of the financing activities in the differences management measures that we have made. The performance is largely driven by sustainable factors because it's the net profit and this is the effect of CapEx below depreciation that we are continuing to have as we have been commenting in the past. And in page 10, just the picture of the balance sheet, the basic structure is the same that we have been seeing in the last quarters and years, but nevertheless, what we see here is that the increase in financial services activity is increasing the size of the balance sheet because we have cash and cash equivalents bigger, but we have financial services payable also bigger. And the net, meaning our own cash, as is stressed below in the box, is 242 million euros of net financial cash that we have. And the different impacts, the different logics, what is behind these figures is basically the same. We have the healthcare liabilities there, we have the tax credit because of the healthcare liabilities, and we have a sound balance sheet in total. Going to page 11, I pass to, or 12, I pass to Andrea, please.
Hello, good morning. Regarding the evolution of each business unit, first of all, if we go to the mail business unit, we should stress out, you see in the box on the left side below, that we are continuing to reduce the cost in the mail business unit, but now more than cutting costs, because we believe that nowadays we have at the present moment, because this is something that is always evolving, but at the present moment we have the installed capacity that we need to provide our services, but what we are doing is take advantage of the installed capacity to provide services to the other business units. One of them, you know already very well in detail what we are doing, is taking advantage of our retail network of stores to sell financial services, and we are giving steps forward, as you know. Yesterday we decided about that. And also, something we are doing and we are starting to implement in the second half of the year, it's the integration of the distribution network with the express and parcel distribution network, which will mean that we'll use or take advantage of the installed capacity in the distribution network of the mail to provide the distribution of parcel business, namely to B2C or namely to e-commerce parcels. So we will get also a benefit of the integration in the mail business. As we told you, we expect relevant benefits from this process in the express and parcel business, but we'll also benefit the mail business because it will take advantage of spare capacity that we have available in the network. Regarding the evolution of the recurring EBITDA or the reported EBITDA, I would only stress out, as Francisco said in the beginning, we shouldn't look at the quarter to take serious conclusions about the evolution. We should look at the longer period, namely because volumes evolve a lot from quarter to quarter. Just to give you an idea, you saw in the beginning that the volumes of non-addressed mail were down a lot in this quarter, basically because last year we had an extraordinary event that was the local election that
in July and somewhat in September, we had some non-advertising or non-addressed mail sent to population to show the new map of counties and municipalities that the government implemented. So this kind of effect in one quarter can change a lot the analysis we do. We are confident that we are doing the right things in the mail business, namely moving the price up to compensate the volume decline, moving also continuing to do cost measures to cut costs, to have the jaws on the right direction, but we shouldn't expect that the 30% in the third quarter is something that is sustainable for the future. We should expect that the growth that we had in the 9 months, it's a more relevant figure to look at. If we go to page 13, regarding financial services, I would stress out that the volumes in the left side up, that the volumes of placement of saving flows continue to be very strong in the quarter and also in the 9 months. We see that we already doubled the values of last year. Regarding payments and money order transfers, we are having a decline, but if you see in the third quarter, it's coming down slower. One of the reasons was what Francisco already told, we are starting to have the effects of the economic recovery in all the business lines, and payments and transfers is something that takes advantage of these effects. And also, we said in the end of first half that we gained a new contract with Social Security to pay some benefits that will have a positive effect on these volumes of, namely, money orders. Regarding the costs, just to stress out that the increase in costs in this quarter was basically because we introduced the consumer credit, and in the first time we did a proper campaign to promote this product, and also we did training to the team, so the cost was inflated or was increased in this quarter because of this. And you need also always to take into account that if we launch a new product, we will have increased costs in the moment we launch the product. So it's the effect of that. It's not something that we'll expect to see in the next quarter. Regarding the EBITDA, it's important to stress out that in the last quarter we will have, as Francisco said, this quarter we already had, but in the last quarter even more important, we will have a comparison effect left positive, and this quarter we already had. You see that in the 9 months the performance is better in terms of EBITDA than it was in this quarter, basically because we had this increased cost and also because the comparison with last year, it's less enthusiastic because last year we were increasing a lot in the last half of the year, and in the last quarter when we launched the treasury certificate was a big increase in the last quarter in financial services. So it's going very well. It's continuing to increase. We are continuing to believe that we'll drive the growth of the financial services, and we'll talk about the postal bank that will is a step forward in the expanding financial services strategy that we have. If we go to page 14 in Express and Parcels, first of all, I would like to stress out that we had an increase in volumes in Portugal and a small decline in volumes in Spain. As Francisco said, August is always a terrible month for Express and Parcels because it depends a lot of the economic activity, and which means that in August this year we didn't saw growth. It's always bad. Last year was bad. This year it was bad. But when we are seeing growth coming from economic activity, if we have a month where there is no economic activity, we do not have a growth, so we will affect the growth of the quarter and will affect the growth of the this business area. Regarding, we expect to continue the recovering trend that we are seeing, and this recovering trend will come from two things. First of all, you see in the chart in the left side below that we are starting to see the first benefits of the integration of the network in the cost side of the Express and Parcel business. That will become more relevant next year, but we'll still see more benefits still this year. And the second effect is that we are having a relevant growth in Portugal and Express and Parcels, and the process of restructuring in Spain is going ahead, and we expect to start having positive results, although it's still a work in progress, so it can be, as we told since the beginning, a bumpy road. Better quarters and worse quarters depending on the measures that we are implementing. Regarding the EBITDA, instead of comparing with last year, first of all, comparing last year of the quarter, you see that we are having a positive evolution. We are increasing. But more than that, if we compare the EBITDA margin that we had in the first half of the year with the 9 months, we have an increase in the EBITDA margin, which means that is the effect of this integration of the distribution network and the effect that it has in the costs. If we now go now to the outlook, first of all, because we saw from Peter that yesterday there were some questions about this, the items that we do not comment in the outlook is because we are not revising the guidance. It's not because we are taking out the guidance that we did previously, it's because we are not revising. First of all, in terms of revenues, given the performance we have in the 9 months, we are pretty confident that we can end the year with positive growth or growth in the top line between 1 and 2%, something that we do not expect from now to have a different end of the year. Regarding the EBITDA, we are not revising the guidance that we did before because we still have some measures that we are implementing and we want to see the effect that they will have in the EBITDA to when we do the end of the year figures. We will explain in detail the impact of those measures. One of them, as you know, we changed the provider of the or the manager of our healthcare plan from PTSS to Medis, and this will have positive impact in our costs, but we cannot yet estimate the absolute value, so we are not giving yet detailed analysis on that. We will give when we have the figures, as we did with the IT procurement contract and the values that we got after the analysis. In terms of CapEx, having in mind that we, in the end of 9 months, we are around 5 million euros, we will not get to the 20 million. We believe that will be between around 15 million euros, somewhat above, somewhat below, but will be around 15 million euros. Going to the business unit, as we told you, we expect not to have a growth in the mail revenues, but we can have it. So our guidance is to have flattish revenues in the mail business. This is very important because this will enable that the top line of CTT, that is mail revenues with express and parcel revenues and with financial service revenues, can grow because mail continues to be the most important area, namely in terms of revenues. In terms of efficiency, it will come, as I explained, more from the cost allocation and the cost sharing of the installed capacity we have with the other business units than cost cutting that we had in the last years. So this will be the trend for the future. Regarding financial services, the launch of the Postal Bank, it's a continuation of the strategy to expand financial services. I would say it's a trend or it's a project that we are launching together with the strategy that we already have, and it will be important to stress out that part of the financial services is not inside of the figures we give about the Postal Bank, but at the end of the day, the financial services business area will integrate the Postal Bank because this is all part of the strategy for financial services. Regarding the Postal Bank, yet we can consider if there are opportunities and if they make sense to the strategy, to the organic strategy we have and the business plan we have for the Postal Bank, to consider small acquisitions. And to say small acquisition is acquisitions that will enable us to save part of the CapEx that we estimate for the Postal Bank, because we acquire with the acquisition the capabilities that we would develop throughout organic growth. So it will be inside of the values that we have foreseen for the CapEx of the Postal Bank. Regarding Express and Parcels, big focus on the integration of Express and Parcels and mail distribution networks with improving profitability in Portugal.
something that is very important to stress out, that we are on double-digit EBITDA margin in Portugal. We arrived to that figure in the last month. It's very important. It's the benefit of this and the strategy that we are pursuing in Portugal, having the negative impact of the restructuring in Spain. But as we told you, we are taking advantage of this strong performance in the other business areas to do the restructuring in Spain with more speedness that we can, not harming the overall business. E-commerce growth, it's a very important trend that we need to capture, because in Portugal, as we told you previously, it's lagging behind other countries, and we can take the advantage of the lessons we had in other countries and the experience of other countries to do benchmark and to try to develop and be in the driving seat of the development of e-commerce in Portugal and e-commerce offers in Portugal. We don't want to do e-commerce, we want to be the provider of e-commerce solutions, and probably we can go to next slide that gives you a better picture of what we reached, the conclusions we reached about the overall picture for the future and what is the role that CTT should play in the future. We had up until now a big effect in our business, that was the substitution effect. That was the substitution of physical mail or the physical world by the email and all digital solutions. We had people, instead of receiving a physical mail or transactional mail, receiving e-billings. People doing, instead of doing shops or shopping in the store, starting to do online shopping. All this affected our business negatively, but what we are now seeing is that the digital world, it's becoming more integrated or needing more the physical world to connect with the customers and to connect companies with other companies. And this what we call the integration effect and the e-convenience effect. Is, first of all, what we know more, the e-commerce, that the need for parcel delivery, the services and the e-services, the need for multi-services shops. The big example we have is the citizen shop that is to provide online or assistance to the population to use the online platforms of the government, or the e-work, people working at home, to the companies that will need to move things instead of moving people. Instead of having people at work, we will have things coming from the home of the people to the companies, and this will drive also mail and parcel business. Also, the e-convenience effect. And this is what we saw, namely with what Amazon did in the UK. When you are a provider of e-services or e-commerce, you need to have an integrated, or you would like to have an integrated solution to cover all the aspects of the company. Customer service, delivery, customer attention, marketing, all those things, you would like to have a proper integrated offer. And this is the view of CTT for the future, and this will be what CTT will try to develop the offer in order to capture this trend and to capture the important business that will come from this new perspective about the electronic substitution or the digital world. Now I'll pass to Francisco to talk about the Postal Bank.
So the Postal Bank, we have always stated that in the last quarter of this year we'll present the board with a detailed analysis and a business plan and ask for a decision. The board has decided yesterday to go ahead with the bank. There are still steps to be made until the bank can open its doors, some in regulatory front, and of course a lot of them in terms of to develop the project internally. But in terms of the regulatory steps that we put below, the Bank of Portugal now will analyze the revised business plan. We have made a a market research, a deep market research focused on this. We have revised our assumptions because we had to update it. We have thought about the business model and the business plan, and the new file has been filed and has to be analyzed. But the issue here is that after they analyze, they see the new reality, and then they give us authorization to go ahead. In parallel, we will now start to do our own work in terms of IT procurement and customization, in terms of starting to recruit the head office people that we need to reinforce, and this type of activities. As we also have been saying, we don't exclude the possibility of a minor acquisition of one of the small banks that are here, if the opportunity comes in the right moment, at the right price, and in the right conditions. But this is just to open to your knowledge this possibility. Nothing concrete or specific today to announce or even to discuss. And so we go ahead. In terms of the three next slides, page 20, basically what we give is some data that we believe are important to evaluate the opportunity. We believe there is in fact an opportunity to launch a banking operation in the Portuguese market, addressing average income and more conservative customers, and there is not an opportunity to any bank. But here we are talking a bank that we will launch. We have already the retail presence, we have already the awareness, we have already people trusting in us in terms of our services and our brand, and we have staff in the front office used to sell financial products. And so what we are talking here is an enlargement of scope, but it's not a new thing. And that is the reason why the numbers get a good color for us, is because we don't have to do a huge investment in a branch network in Portugal. Here you see that the main factors considered when choosing a bank, and you see that we rate quite well in most of them, and that's what we want to show there. Then, in page 21, is to show that our retail network has a high capillarity. When we compare the number of branches we have to the largest Portuguese retail banks, and all of them are decreasing for different reasons the number of branches, and our branches are not there because we are a bank, they are there for the mail business, and what we are here is using the network and so the infrastructure we already have to serve in different businesses, and we have available capacity. We have done a study which is shown in the below part of the graph. We have made a study to see what type of capacity we have in terms of spare capacity, and we have 30% of spare capacity even after the other businesses that we are already developed. So in reality we will be building on our installed and spare capacity. And in page 22, just to remember that we have an extensive experience in a broad range of financial services. In payments, in money orders and transfers, in savings and investments, in insurance that, as you know, are also here in terms of real insurances, and in consumer credit in this partnership with Settlem that we launched this summer. And so, in fact, we are well known for this. People are used to work with us, and people trust us their money, because when they do the saving products with us, they are trusting us their money. So really, we believe that we have experience and the trust from the market or the population in general. In page 23, we also stress that we kept something that for us is an important commitment and that we are always committed to, which is the dividend capacity according to the dividend policy that we stated and we have been keeping since we IPO'd. And here we show the differences between operating free cash flow and dividends, which is an important proof that we generate per year money enough to do this type of investment without putting in risk the dividend that we pay. So we have over the last years consistently generating operating free cash flow much bigger than the dividend. This is not new for you. This year, or these 9 months, it's proving that again. And the business capex needs are low. Our guidance is the same, 15 to 20 this year. Probably will be more in the 15 level, but the range is more or less the same, except the Postal Bank. The Postal Bank capex needs, so the equity that we have to put in the project, because it will be a subsidiary, is in a 5-year horizon around 100 million, in a 3-year horizon around 80-something million. So this is the range of figures we are discussing. And we have, as you know, strong cash in the balance sheet. I'm going to page 24. Here I pass to Andre, and I ask him to go more deeply into these figures.
Regarding, we wanted to give you projected some figures about the projections or the business plan that we have for the Postal Bank. As you know, this, as Francisco said, is still subject to the approval of the Bank of Portugal, the Central Bank, and also it's still pending final detailed analysis of the implementation plan of the Postal Bank. Namely, we did the RFI regarding the IT platform that we want to implement to the Postal Bank, but we'll now do the RFP, and with that we will get a better or a detailed value of the IT costs that we'll need, or the IT investment that we'll need to do for the Postal Bank. What we can say that we were very conservative in all the analysis that we did regarding the cost or the investments that we needed to do. And in terms of the revenues and the business plan, we were realistic. I wouldn't say that we were conservative, but we did, as we said in the press release, we did several analyses to see all the scenarios. We did a lot of scenarios, and we reached the conclusion that even in worse scenarios that we had in our base case, the NPV of this project was still positive, and this confirmed what we told previously, that we would only go to the Postal Bank as a strategy to develop financial services if we felt that the NPV of this project would be clearly positive to add value to CTT. So we reached the conclusion, even with worst case scenarios, taking into consideration to give an example, keeping the Euribor at the level that it is today for a long term, the project of Postal Bank will continue to deliver positive net present value and positive cash flows to the business. So we decided to go ahead. Going to the figures that we see here, as Francisco said, we would invest in the year three up to 85 million euros of CTT money in the project, and in the year five, 100 million. As Francisco said, part is for the needs of capital, part is for the investments or the capex we'll need to do in terms of IT, in terms of hiring some people to support this business, and some investments in marketing and layout of the stores. Because the big cost that is the retail network, we will use the capacity we have and we will use the network that we have. In terms of projected revenues, you see here the evolution. It's an evolution that it will come along the time. It's not a very strong growth in the first 2 to 3 years, but it's a growth, sustainable growth along the period. And we did the detailed cash flows for a 10-year period in order to have a clear picture what we would get at the end. Regarding net income, as we told you, we will get to break even at year three. We will start having positive net income, and afterwards relevant income coming from this business, which will mean that after year five, beginning year six, we will be able to start paying dividends from the Postal Bank to CTT in order to support more the cash flow or the cash generation of CTT. You see here the projected accumulated cash flows. At the end of year 10, it will be very relevant for an investment of 100 million euros to have almost 400 million euros
of accumulated cash flow, part of which will stay, as you see below, to support the growth of the equity, of the common equity of the bank, but part can be distributed to CTT. As Francisco said, using the retail network of CTT, using the installed capacity of CTT, that is one of the relevant strategies that we are pursuing, will enable us to have a cost to income when we come to a steady state or a normal velocity of the bank. We will get the marginal cost, we believe, below 45%. That is quite below, or it is a very interesting cost to income compared with normal banking activity, which will mean that we'll have a return on equity above 25%. That is very, very attractive to and made us take the decision to create a postal bank. I would say that it's very, we said it already, that the postal bank will be able to distribute dividends from year 6 onwards, and more than that, as Francisco already stated, we do not expect that this project will have any impact on our dividend policy because we have relevant dividend, relevant cash and cash flow generation that will enable us to pursue this project without affecting the dividend policy. Do you want to?
Yes, just the last page to recap, but this is basically what we said. So we see a clear opportunity to go ahead with the banking operation, targeting the average income and more conservative customers, and with a no-frills offer. We want to be really a low-cost producer in the banking activity, building on our retail network with high capillarity and untapped capacity. And with already an extensive experience in a broad range of financial services. The figures point to break-even at year 3, and here we are talking about figures which are marginal in the sense that it's not when we... what we put is the difference of revenues and costs because of having a bank, and this is year 3.
Yes.
Because probably when you see the bank, it will be even sooner, depending on exactly what of our current financial services activities will be within that. The regulatory capital injections will probably stop, or at least we target to stop at year 5 with a total of, capping a total of 100 million euros. In terms of balance sheet, the plan is to have around 50% of the assets in loans only, and that being a mortgage, we will not enter directly into a consumer loan. We have the partnership with ZLM and we'll keep it, as we said. And so the credit risk analysis, recovering and bad loans of consumer loans will not be dealt with us and will not affect our balance sheet and P&L. In the case of mortgage, yes. But they will be subject to the development of our deposit base. It will be conservative also in terms of liquidity. And liquidity coverage, we have defined targets, and so what is in the business plan is net stable funding and core tier 1 ratios always above regulatory targets. They have to be on regulatory targets, but we want to be even more conservative than that. And this is, we believe, a continuation of the existing strategy to grow organically the financial services business. Time to market could be reduced by an acquisition of some required capacities, mainly one of two or three small banks that we can think of. Very small banks that we can think of in the Portuguese landscape. And we have designed the project to have no impact on CTT's dividend policy.
Just to comment something, just to let it clear. The postal bank, it's not the sum of the postal bank plus the financial services. It's the postal bank per se business, which means that when we report the figures of financial services with the postal bank inside, probably, or we expect them to be positive because the financial service will continue to perform, as we said before, a strong performance. But the postal bank, as you see in these figures, will start to give positive impact after year 3, that we consider that is very interesting, taking into account that it's creating something from zero.
Very well. And so, thank you for your attention. With this a little longer than usual presentation, but we have several items to cover. And we open for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question over the phone at this time, please press star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. And please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Matthew O'Keefe from Berenberg. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, morning everyone. I've got three questions, please. One on the cost side, one on the bank, and one on your healthcare liabilities. On the cost side, first of all, you mentioned a benefit last year of $8 million from revising the telephone benefit. So my question is, why is that not a recurring benefit? I mean, have you reinstated it, or have you replaced that with other benefits? Or maybe I may have just misunderstood something there. My second question, on the bank, I was interested in slide 21, particularly that capacity slide. I just wonder if you could clarify what that shows. Presumably, that doesn't mean that your employees have 30% free time on their hands. At least I hope it doesn't mean that. Perhaps you could expand on that chart. It is interesting. And then just finally on the question of healthcare liabilities, you mentioned earlier in the year the possibility of shifting some of those to the state, and I wondered where we were in that process and what you could tell us. So those are my three questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Francisco here. I'll go to the last two, and I'll ask André to a brief comment on the first one. So in terms of the shifting to the state healthcare, as you know, what we have been saying is that it depends on the willingness of the government and on the business being a good business to our shareholder. And if the two conditions would be met, then we could go, could do something like that. Only by the end of this year, we'll be sure exactly if the government will go ahead or not. As they have been saying, I think, during this year, especially in the second half of this year, I believe the probability that the government wants to go ahead is small. And this is basically because of public accounting rules that have changed, and the government also entering in a more less harsh mood to before elections mood, and so they don't want to upset a lot of families of our retired people, especially when they get nothing in advantage because of the accounting rules have changed. So it's not a decision yet. We have to wait until the end of the year, but the probability that goes ahead is small. The second about the capacity, in fact, is exactly what it says. We have an infrastructure of shops, as we call it, but post offices, and we cannot have half persons or two-thirds of persons. We have to have full persons, and so you go from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3, and you have to consider the shifts and the holidays and these type of things. And so you have spare capacity when you consider a full-term employee working the normal hours during the year.
That's in a store. That is normal.
And that is in a store. It's normal. So, of course, this 30% is not equally and evenly distributed everywhere, but it's the average of what we have. And then for purpose of sizing the capacities, we have done a more deep analysis branch by branch to be sure that we were just considering the non-continuous nature of human beings. And in terms of the 8 million, André?
Regarding the 8 million, just to explain, is the 8 million we have in the employee benefits that you see in the balance sheet. We have several items. One of them was around 20 million euros, that 18 million euros that we have of benefits coming from telephonic signature. That was something that came from the past in the company. We gave to our employees and our retired employees. the benefit of having a signature of a fixed telephone. After a period, this telephone was given in, instead of giving the signature of fixed telephony, we gave money to the retired people for this benefit. Instead of continuing to give money for the retired employees, we start giving them a mobile phone with the 15 euros of calls to do, and this enabled us to reduce the cost of this benefit to one third of what it was, so we have a saving of around 8.9 million euros. So this is one-off cut of a benefit. It's not the benefit that comes from our staff that is working, it comes from our retired people. If we go to the employee benefits in the balance sheet and we cut benefits, this goes to P&L as a non-recurring benefit that we got in staff costs. So it's non-recurring because it's a cut in a benefit that will stay forever, but it's the present value of the of this cut is coming to 1 year results.
In this case, last year.
In terms of cash, we are saving per year. I would say this year has a 14-year duration. We are saving 1/14 of the 9 million euro of cut that we are having, taking into account the present value that will change somewhat these values. But this is the explanation. Okay.
Those are all very clear. If you just allow me one follow-up, what would be the payroll implications of making use of that 30% available capacity then? How much would it cost you?
Directly, nothing, because they receive their full salary because of that. As we are more and more introducing variable payment, you might see some increase in the incentive space, but not in the fixed cost base.
All right, terrific. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Christopher Combe of JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody. Just a couple of questions. Maybe I'll take one at a time. So just to be clear on the projections you provide on slide 24, those include loans, insurance, and pay shop. If that's the case, can you give us a sense of how much contribution you have in year 5 and year 10 from those businesses so we can better understand sort of the cash return of the incremental investment?
This is marginal analysis. These businesses are not being taken into consideration, and we will not give the forward-looking figures about this business that are ongoing. This is just to show the marginal value of the Postal Bank. It's not to give forward-looking projections, and you shouldn't look at these figures of Postal Bank as a projection. It's our business plan, as we told in the beginning. It's just a projected business plan that needs yet to be agreed by the Central Bank, Bank of Portugal, and also when we get to the detailed implementation plan after having the procurement process, namely of IT, and the procurement process of people to increase our staff with knowledge in banking activities, and the procurement to do the marketing and to do also the rebranding of the post offices to include the bank brand, we will get the detailed business plan. So this is to give you the figures that made us make this decision. It's not forward-looking projections of the Postal Bank. Okay? Next.
That's clear. And what should we expect in terms of any OPEX associated with this plan, sort of in the near-term years and in the first 3 years?
We are not disclosing this. It's inside of this if you see that we will be investing the 85 million euros and we'll start having positive results on year three. So in year three, the OPEX will be lower than the or will be lower than the revenue, so we'll start having positive impact. But if you see the revenues before year three, that is the first year will have positive impact. The other one will come from OPEX or depreciation, so it's more or less the same.
Okay, and the last one on the bank. So these are marginal projections. This is the business plan. Well, besides getting final authorization, what do you see as the key execution risks? Is it really around the IT? Is it development of the deposit base? How would you rank order sort of the risks of the plan?
Those two are important, but they are not at the same time. So the until opening the door, the IT is probably on the critical path. But also the recruiting and training of what we have to do. After opening the door, of course, it's the always the risk of the business. So you go to the market and you try to capture customers and you try to capture deposits and you try to sell loans. And there, I would say that the customer acquisition is the key, and then, of course, the ramp up of the deposit base.
Okay, and the last one, really, just a
Christopher, just to give you one comment regarding the OPEX, just for you to have an idea. As Francisco said, this will run inside of our present retail network. So some of the OPEX of the Postal Bank are revenues for the mail business because it's using cost from the mail business, or is cost allocation that will go out from the mail business to the Postal Bank. So you need to bear that in mind, that this OPEX of the Postal Bank, it's not only effective OPEX, it's OPEX that will take costs out of other business. As in the first question, it will use part of our spare capacity. So here what we put, it's the marginal analysis in order to give you the best flavor.
Okay, and the last one on the bank, I understand that a lot of your banking competition has made a lot of noise around the monopoly you have with the savings and insurance products and the impact the state has had on their current account balances. Do you think this adds some degree of pressure or heightens the anxiety amongst the banks in now indicating another threat, yet another threat, and perhaps is that a threat to the monopoly that you have with placement of savings and insurance?
I think it will increase the stress, to answer directly, but we don't have a monopoly. They can also distribute the products. They don't want to distribute the products because on their product range they believe that it will cannibalize the deposit that they have beneath. What we see from them is trying to pressure the government to decrease the competitiveness of these products. And we don't see the government decreasing the competitiveness in the sense of coming from too competitive to not competitive at all. We would anticipate that one of these days the government will adjust the interest rates they are paying because the interest rates in general went down. You saw the interest rates of the products we place are more or less the same for 1.5 years, and in that period the interest rates of Portuguese bonds have decreased substantially. So I think we can anticipate some decrease in interest rates, but I don't think at all that will take competitiveness to the product, and so we'll continue to have a competitive product to place. Our cost structure will not be the same as a normal bank for the reasons we have been discussing. And so I think they will have some stress, but they will have to live with it. That's not by chance that the Postal Bank never took off in Portugal. It was exactly because the banks and especially Caixa were very effective in blocking the initiatives. Because of the preparation of the privatization, the mood changed and we got the license, and so now it's done.
But having said that, you need, as we said in the beginning, it's one of the first points that we mentioned. We believe it's a good timing to come to the market because although we can be a menace to the big banks that are operating in Portugal, there are several events that occurred recently in the financial market that it's opportunities to grow for the banks that are installed. So we also want to take advantage of these opportunities, so we are not only stealing market share of the existing banks but probably of some of the banks that are facing the problems of this stress recently in the Portuguese market.
Yes, to be more clear on this, As you know, the situation of Novo Banco and Hex Bash, and the bank will be sold rather sooner than later, so sometime during 2015 probably, and one of the strongest possibilities to be sold to one of the other players, which means that they will have to go through a merger, and mergers always constitute opportunities for the other that are out.
Understood, understood. And just one more on the core business. We've seen some early signs of progress with the integration. Let's call it roughly a million in parcels from what it looks like. Should we expect that run rate to accelerate to maybe 2 million per quarter? And does that mean we could see flat year-on-year EBITDA in the fourth quarter at the group level?
Not yet. We will have, we'll continue to have benefit for the year end of the integration. It's not so fast as you were telling, but we expect to have in the fourth quarter at least the same impact we had in the third quarter, probably somewhat more, but for next year will be the relevant period where the implementation will come. This implementation is done by steps. It's not continuous, so we will not have an increasing of the benefits of the integration, a continuous increase. It will be done by steps. But until the year end, we'll continue to have some benefits, but the relevant ones will start happening next year.
So for overall EBITDA guidance, I'm assuming there isn't any at the moment, but is a flat group EBITDA a reasonable expectation for Q4?
We didn't give those guidance, so we are not giving it.
Okay, thank you. I'll turn it over to somebody else. Thanks.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Luca Orsini, One Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, good afternoon. Good morning to everyone. I have a question on the bank again, looking at your slide at page 24 and all what you said. I perfectly understand that you talk about marginal math, and I think I understand what you mean by that, and you gave quite a lot of detailed explanation on that already. But what I would want to understand is how different the business of financial service that you do today within your organization with the business of the bank. Will the two things remain separate until the bank grows and then you integrate them, or will you start the integration of financial service into banks, into the bank, as soon as the bank starts?
Just, we don't have yet, as I told you, part of the implementation plan. We don't have yet the right conclusions about if we'll put all the financial services below the bank or not. Probably we will not put all, we will put part. You need to bear in mind that all of them will be rendered at the same place, that is our retail network store. If they are in the same, if they are inside of the bank or if they are outside, they will be inside of financial service business unit. So, and the guys providing this service will be the ones that will provide the banking services. So at the end of the day, it's not quite different services that we'll give in the bank that we give nowadays in financial services. The marginal analysis is what, just to show you the value added we imagine or we consider the bank will have to CTT. It's not to say that it will be run in a marginal way. It will be part of financial services. As we told from the beginning, it's part of the strategy of expanding financial services.
And then a second question is, will all the branches of Correos, once you get the banking license, will become branches of the banks themselves, or the rollout of the network will be progressive as you train staff, system, and and infrastructure?
The second possibility, it will be progressive, not only because of the training, but also because of the demand that we get in each of the regions we are present. Probably we will start covering all the country, but not in all the places, and we'll do the rollout based on the needs.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Andy Jones from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Mr. Andy Jones, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there. Sorry about that. Good morning, all. I had a number of questions, one on financial services as it exists today, and then a couple more on the bank. The first one on financial services, I think we're now up to more than 7 billion euros of saving flows in the last 2 years versus the 9 billion of redemptions that Portugal saw during the crisis. Do you have any indication on how the IGCP is thinking about their intentions once that 9 billion barrier is reached again?
What we can tell you is from the public statements that the EGCP has made and the Portuguese government, which EGCP represents, is that they continue to believe that the placement of public debt in the retail is a very relevant point or a very relevant selling argument to place public debt in the institutional market. So they do not intend to reduce the strength that they are facing in the placement of public debt in the retail. Probably, we believe they will sooner or later revise the interest rate that they pay in this product, because nowadays the interest rate is quite above, or is strongly above the interest rate that banks pay for deposits, because, as you know, the Euribor is almost at zero, so the interest rates banks are paying for a 3-year term deposit, it's below 1.5-2%, or it's below 1.5%. So the competitiveness of this product is nowadays very, very strong. I believe they will revise the interest rate that they'll pay in this product. I don't believe they are revising the strategy of being strong in placing public debt in the retail, because it's one of the pillars of the strategy of the government to be in the market in the placement of public debt.
Okay, thank you. And then a couple of questions on the bank. I recall that I think in some of your original thinking there wasn't really so much of a plan to be taking credit risk on this bank proposal. Where has your thinking changed around that, or how has it evolved around the possibility of taking on mortgages?
We analyzed the issue, we saw the opportunity. We believe from that analysis we concluded that we could have funding stable enough to allow to enter that venture. The risk management capacity there is something that we know how to set up. In Portugal there are more and more entities where we can outsource the contracting and valuation and that type of things, which are in this activity relevant, but we don't have to set up ourselves. And so it made sense to get contribution also on that, because as Sam pointed out, to have just to be just taking deposits and then placing it with a public debt, it's probably not good enough, and the interest rates of public debt now are low. To do it with other banks does not make sense, and the recent events show us that we have to manage our risks properly. And so we believe that in the risk-reward equation, to enter into a mortgage was a better option than others.
And last but not least, very good selling argument to capture clients, because it's mortgage loans in Portugal. It's a way to have one of the reasons to create the bank. It's to have the loyalty of our customers, and this is a very relevant key selling argument to have loyalty from customers.
Okay, perfect. And on the customer acquisition point, I noticed on slide 20 there's a footnote by price, which says that it's price perception, not actual price, that's the deciding factor among customers. Does that mean to say that you believe that as long as you appear, or as long as you offer a relatively no-frills offer, you still think you can get relatively comparable fees to your competition on the banking side of things?
We intend to be very competitive on pricing. What we say here is that the customers do not check the pricing of the services each month, so they do not change bank if the price is 5 or 10% above of the overall bank that is offering. What they want is to have a cheap bank in terms of services, but they will not mind to have one or two services that are above the other banks, or if there is a bank that comes very aggressive, they will not change after choosing a bank.
Okay. And then, sorry, one final just a check. When you said you mentioned acquisitions and the banking side of things, what exactly would you be acquiring? Would it be a network of branches or just a kind of a customer book and know-how that you'd be wanting to acquire?
It would be even more an operation that is up and running, and so with revenues higher than costs. So it's something that enables you to go much faster to where you want to launch, even if then you have to afterwards do some more investments in IT. But with the people and systems and operating capacities that are already run, but we don't need branches. That's not what we want to buy. That's not our focus. Even it's a minus in the possibilities. We want, it would be good if we can find something that has proven a good capacity of attracting customers.
Okay, thank you very much for your answers.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Nuno Inácio from Espírito Santo Bank of Investment. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good morning everyone. One question on the Postal Bank and the rest on the activity. The Postal Bank, if you mentioned the potential acquisition, this would have to happen in the beginning, no? It would make sense to be investing in IT systems, in projects, and then doing the acquisition. And could something like one of these internet banks that we have here in Portugal be have logic for your project? Then on the activity.
No. Yes and yes.
Okay. Perfect. On the good performance of the mail activity, can you give us, you mentioned in your release an impact of discounts, of the discounts that bulk mail clients are entitled to, but they were, if they don't fulfill some things in terms of assorting, you take those discounts out. Was this having a relevant impact this quarter?
This quarter, apart from the discounts that had a relevant impact, as you know, we started in June to implement this new policy. But more than that, we had a relevant impact from the portfolio, the mix of products, because we have a very strong growth in this in September, namely in the registered mail. And registered mail, since it's a more valued mail, it increases the price. Also, what we see in the mail business, we have some driven mail by the e-commerce, because some of the business that is done in e-commerce comes out as mail because it's small items, very small items that instead of coming as parcels, they come as mail. So, but they come as value-added mail, so this is the big driver of the growth in mail, not the price and the discounts that they will continue to have an important, but in this quarter, the big relevant point to stress is that the mix effect and also having products with more value added help to increase even more the impact of the price increase and the discounts cut or the discounts adjustments that we did.
Okay, and just one final question in terms of the mail activity. How do you see price proposals for bulk mail pricing, considering CPI is now in negative territory and also for the USO service? Thank you.
We cannot give yet any clear picture because it's something that is still being analyzed by the regulator, so we will expect. We have that on the negative side, we have on the positive, or on the positive side for pricing, that the volumes are continuing to go down, but it will be a mix of all the effects. We need to wait, and we don't want to comment for now what will be the regulator decision about this, but what we can tell you is as long as volumes are coming down, our margin or our item, cost per item, it's going up,
so we would expect to have the flexibility to increase price to reflect that.
But in bulk, it's all your option, no?
Yes. This comment is for non-bulk. For bulk, it's our option. Provided that we comply to those general principles that are not an active restriction.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Douglas Hayes from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Three questions, please. First, just coming back to the full-year guidance, appreciate that there are some positives which you can't necessarily forecast, but am I correct in assuming that the increase in the revenue guidance should, all else equal, drop through pretty cleanly to the EBITDA? Or are there any sort of additional one-off costs which you haven't necessarily flagged yet?
You should expect, apart from one-off costs that could come, but basically regarding these restructuring projects that we are putting in place, or one-off benefits or revenues that we can have also from that, namely from the revision of the healthcare plan that we are now discussing with workers and unions, we should expect to have a downward trend to the EBITDA. But as I told, we don't want to revise the guidance on the EBITDA because we believe there will be positive and some negative effects on the EBITDA, non-recurring, that will affect the year-end. And for now, we are still estimating the impact of it, and it will depend on the negotiations that we are putting in place. But at the end of the day, in terms of recurring, the revenues are not bringing more costs to the business.
And adding on this point, repeating something that I said in the conference call of the second quarter, we want to reintroduce variable payment to compensate persons for the performance. As you are aware, four years ago, variable payment in state-owned companies come to zero. We have not yet reintroduced anything. We are working on the proper employee evaluation system that will then drive into the variable payment. But that system will only start to apply on the cycle of 2015, so will only affect the accounts of 2015. But this year, we would want to get some payment also to compensate the staff for these good results that we are having. So this will put pressure on the cost side. But on the other hand, we'll have this issue of the healthcare that we are negotiating with unions on top of the benefits we are having for changing the manager of that. And we are also negotiating a couple of other things with the unions. So the figures are big and could be in different size and with different results. We cannot comment at this stage. And that's why we are not so clear in the EBITDA guidance. Of course, we don't anticipate anything dramatically in either sense, but nevertheless, they are big enough for us to be cautious in what we say.
Okay, great, very clear, thank you. Secondly, on the parcels and express side of things, could you just provide a little bit more color into the competitive dynamics you're seeing in both Portugal and Spain? Especially since it looks like there still continues to be sort of price or yield pressure on the top line development despite the good volume growth.
You have to bear in mind that we are growing more in the B2C business or the e-commerce driven type of parcels, and those are lower priced than the B2B business. And so the mix effect is playing a role as it has in the previous quarters. We are not seeing in day-to-day a pressure on price because of competition. We do from time to time in large contracts. But the major effect that is putting the pressure on the average price that we are seeing is the change in mix.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then finally, coming back to the bank, I appreciate that on slide 24, those are just sort of your general business plans and not necessarily guidance, but what gives you confidence that you can achieve an ROE that's, you know, arguably significantly higher than the rest of the industry, especially when I look across some of the other banks in Europe? It looks like industry ROEs are maybe between 6 and 15% at best. And so I'm just curious to understand why you think, you know, 20, 25% ROEs are achievable for, you know, what you guys are admitting is a more conservative bank.
Yes. Very simple. Because one of the relevant costs at any bank is to have a network to provide the service to its clients. And our strategy, first of all, since we are a no-frill bank, we will not have a lot of resources allocated to the bank to give advisory. We are only a more transactional bank than an advisory bank, so we are not targeting high revenue customers. We can have them and probably will have them. The ones that are more conservative and non-sophisticated will come to CTT, but we are not targeting with advisory or sophisticated advisory. And we are using a cost base that is already there present to provide a lot of services. As you see nowadays, it already provides mail services, will provide more and more support to Express and Parcels in the pickup drop-off services. It will continue to provide the financial services that nowadays provides, and on top of that will provide the banking services. So we will use a cost base that is already in place in order to provide these services. Since this is done on a marginal basis, the marginal cost of having the bank is quite lower than the other banks. If you see some recent studies, banks are facing the challenge how to evolve in terms of coverage of the country, in terms of branches, to have a lighter branch network in order to cut costs. What is the relevant cost for banks?
Okay, great. Very clear. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from David Kerstens of Jefferies. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. I was wondering, are you aiming to launch the bank in an earnings-neutral manner? I understand from your slide that you anticipate startup losses of around 22 million. In year one and year two. Is it fair to assume that these will be compensated by further cost savings on your transformation program? I saw in your press release you mentioned a figure of 19 million. I was wondering if that already includes the savings from the IT communication change in contract that you announced at the end of Q2. I think those were 14 million. And what is the incremental 5 million coming from? Then my second question is on the strong price and mix effect in mail. I think you had relatively high growth in some high-priced items such as priority mail and registered mail. Is there something funny going on there? Is this a sustainable trend, or is this why you are relatively cautious for the fourth quarter? Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Regarding the bank, yes, we will have negative results in the first 2 years and start having 7 million, or we expect to have 7 million in the third year. Depends a lot on the implementation, as we are saying. As we told you, we are being conservative in terms of OPEX and CAPEX costs in the business plan that we built. Now that we are going to the implementation plan, we will see the real aspects on that, and this does not include the financial services that we are providing nowadays. Regarding the IT contract, the savings will only come next year, so this year is no impact of this new procurement. It will only come next year, even in this year, and it's one of the reasons we are being conservative. We will have some costs of changing from one provider to the other, not relevant one, but will mean some costs, additional costs in the IT in order to change from IBM, that is our sole provider nowadays, to the new provider that will come in January 1st next year.
So Sorry, but the 40 million that you flagged in relation to Q2, is that included in the 19 million that you present today?
No, no, it's only for next year.
No. One second.
No, the project of IT was not in the transformation program.
Okay, but that's additional.
Sorry, but that 19 is something of the past. It's not of the future. So what we are saying is that with the transformation planning plan that we have set up, we are already capturing
19 million.
Effects of 19 million, but those are effects coming both from revenues and from costs, depending on the different initiatives that you launch. You should not use that as a proxy of something for the future in terms of your model.
It's already captured.
Okay.
The 14 are something specific, and they will be starting on 2015 as we announced. But the 19 is just sizing the impact of what we have been doing.
Okay, thank
and
you. That's clear.
To give you some ideas about what is inside of the 19, the plan that we have to expand financial services, we have some initiatives, namely launching new products that is inside of the transformation plan. Part of the integration of networks, a small part was already this year and the big part will be next year. Part of the mail, the adjustment of the mail installed capacity was made, the most of it was made last year, but the big impact was obtained this year, and you see in the results in the EBIT of the mail, you see the impact of that. So the 90 million come from projects that were implemented last year, and the results we are seeing this year, or projects that we are already implementing on the beginning of the year, and we are already seeing the results. Regarding the priority and the registered mail, last year, you made, or someone made me the same question. What I can tell you, we have a big client of registered mail that is the tax authorities. And in Portugal, tax collection and being very effective on tax collection it's one of the policies of this government in order to try to reduce the public deficit. The government even this year said in the end of this year when he send the new budget for next year to the Parliament, that one of the big strategies of the government is to be more and more effective on tax collection. Having said that, we believe that one of the ways to be more effective on tax collection is to send a lot of notifications to the taxpayers to pay the taxes on time and to pay all the taxes that they need to pay. So can we expect this to continue? I believe as long as we have taxes to pay, we'll continue to have a strong flow of taxes, of tax notifications.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Philippe Leite, BPI. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, everyone. I have just two additional questions. First one regarding working capital. Can you provide us more visibility on what was the evolution of working capital in 9 months? And what is your expectation for year end? And last one, regarding your partnership with the government on citizen shops, when do you expect to reach a final agreement regarding the financial and economic model of this new financial services, of this new service, and when should it contribute to your P&L? Thank you.
In the second one, while Andrea prepares the first one, we cannot give you a precise date because, as I will say this diplomatically, when you are in these sort of negotiations, you never know the speed. We are working on it, we are negotiating, and things are progressing, but it's difficult to guarantee that you will have it finished until the end of the year. But if not, I assume it will be early next year. In terms of the specific impacts and how it will affect, only after that we can comment and give guidance. What I can say is the same that we have been saying. It will have some relevance in terms of the spread of the cost of the fixed
the fixed infrastructure that we have in branches, but it will not have a huge contribution for our P&L, contrary, for instance, with what we are getting from financial services. In terms of working capital, André?
In terms of working capital, we didn't have any major evolution, nor negative nor positive in this quarter, basically because some of the measures that we are implementing will only take effect when new contracts come in place. One example, when the new IT contracts come in place, we can have a better days of payments because it's already in the contracts that we are signing with the new provider. But what we did in the first half, it was a big part of what we can do this year. Regarding the receivables, we are still doing some measures, but we didn't saw yet the positive impact on that, namely to give some incentives to pay on time, and this needs to be done a long time. In the first half of the year, we did the big one that had a big impact because the revenues of mail, it's a big part of the CTT revenues and a big part of the client's accounts outstanding. That was the revision of the pricing and the discounts with some measures regarding the payment on time. After this, the other measures are smaller and will come on along the time. Probably last quarter will have some positive impact, and in the beginning of next year, some of the new contracts will bring new impact to the working capital.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Christopher Combe, JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, everybody. Sorry to ask a few follow-ups. Just on the projections for the bank, I wanted to ask if it's too early to get a read on what your proposed payout range might look like from the Banco Postal earnings. And then second, can you give us some color on your confidence in monetizing those deferred tax assets beginning from 2015? Thank you.
Regarding the payout, we cannot give yet any flavor, but it will depend on the cash that we'll need to keep up a very strong equity on the postal bank. But as you see in the figures that we presented, we expect to be able to start paying dividends after year 6. And at the end of year 10, we expect to be reaching somewhat closer to or around 70 million of net income. So it will be irrelevant, even if the payout is lower than we have in CTT, it will be irrelevant cash outflow or cash flow to CTT coming from the postal bank.
Okay, thank you.
Second one.
Thank you. We will now take our last question from Luca Rossini.
Just answering regarding deferred tax assets. Since we are doing the negotiation with unions and with workers of the employee benefits that are in the balance sheet, we decided not yet to advance very fast with the monetization of the tax credit. In order, we need to have the clear picture of the employee benefits that will stay in the balance sheet, if they will stay in the balance sheet, if they don't go to the government, and we'll only implement this afterwards because it takes some cost to implement it. And in order not to incur in costs that will not be used, we will only put in place, we already have the project done, but we only put in place after knowing for sure what will be the value of the healthcare benefits or the employee benefits that will stay in our balance sheet.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our last question from Luca Rossini, One Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you for allowing a second question. It's again on slide 24 on the bank. What is the Euribor assumption that you have made in slide 24 for year 3, year 5, and year 10?
We cannot give that detail because we are not giving, but we are assuming that Euribor will recover, but will not recover to very high levels. But we did, as I explained, a stress test assuming that the Euribor would stay at these present levels, at around zero. But at the end of the day, it came that the NPV of the project would continue to be positive. Although, as someone said when we were discussing this, if the Euribor stays at zero for the next 10 years, the less of our problems will be the postal bank, because probably the European economy will have a lot of more problems to solve. But we did a stress test assuming an arrival at the zero level that we have nowadays.
Nevertheless, the basic scenario is aligned with the market view. We didn't change it too much.
Yeah.
Okay, and so if the Euribor stays at zero, the bank stays at break-even? Margin?
Positive. No, positive.
Positive, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions, and I would like to hand over to the speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Very well. Thank you very much for you all to attend. I think it has been a very good set of results. I would dare to say so, although I should not be the one. And I think we have been able to clarify the doubts you have, and the project of the bank will keep delivering news as far as we have new developments, and then as we prepare to launch. So thank you again, and look forward to see you soon. Bye.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.